Welcome to Sit Rep NYC, the New York City Department of Veterans Services podcast. I'm Gil Feliciano. This episode is part of our series on the health of women veterans. Today, you will hear from women veterans who have suffered combat injuries and have worked to create a new life after service. Aaliyah Hunter, United States Army National Guard veteran.
I joined the military in November of 1999. I wanted to be a part of all those things I could be a part of that was bigger than me. And just grabbing an understanding of the bigger purpose is something that you always have to keep at the forefront, because it's so easy to just to let go or to drop out. And I never quit anything in my life, and I just wasn't going to be one of them.
How did you become disabled?
Okay. Thank you for that, question. To be honest, I don't think I was ever asked that question before. But how did I become disabled? In 2003, my unit was, we got orders to go to Iraq. And so in 2003, I was taken out of school and we were mobilized and we got to Mosul, well, Kuwait, in March of 2004. And then on to Iraq, Mosul, Iraq. Amongst other close calls that I've had, there was just one in particular. There was this suicide bomber attack in December 21st, 2004, at the mess hall, the diner facility. And I was in that explosion, and I remember sitting there, and I remember just hearing this huge explosion and looking up and just seeing a massive hole in a tent and fire everywhere. I remember being blasted into the air and landed, and then everything else became a blur. I woke up, I was outside on the bunker. I suffered a major head injury. And so from then I experienced headaches, and then from the headaches, they turned into migraines. The next couple of years, they turned into vertigo, extreme vertigo. So the vertigo from a combat-related injury, it's not coming from the ears. You know, your ears have, you know, it's responsible for the follicles. It's responsible for the equilibrium. Well, this is different. It's coming from the head. And so, you know, every morning, it takes me a while to get up, you know, the dizziness, you gotta wait to stop spinning. You know, you have good days and you have days that where you can't move, you know, you're paralyzed. I remember the day I got a walker, you know, just to make it around the house. So many times I've left my car at work and, you know, had to be taken, had to be picked up. It takes your vision. It takes everything from you. This is more than just like a dizzy spell. This is an episode. My episodes would last anywhere from 3 to 8 days. And you can't move. If you can, you're crawling. And you're crawling, the nausea is so much that it's just, so it just impacts your daily living activities. TBI is what I suffered, a traumatic brain injury. Amongst others, you know, back injury, post-traumatic, you know. I guess I'm one of those veterans that we called it the invisible disability. You don't see it when you look at me, but it's there. You experience it every single day. I didn't want to be seen in the world as a disabled veteran. I didn't want to have those labels. I didn't want to be broken. I didn't want to have the anger issues that I had leaving the military. And I still don't want to be seen this way. I don't want to be seen this way at all. I knew the extent of my injuries were bad. Like, I knew that they were bad. And I wasn't prepared for the outcome. Just to give you a little bit of my journey, I worked with the neurologist for many years. And it was advised that, like, things would just not get better for me if I continued to do the things that I was doing, such as work. Like, so how am I going to pay bills? How am I going to eat? How am I going to live if I don't work? So I continue to defy that order. I tried everything I could as far as alternatives, you know, acupuncture, shock therapy. I did it all, group therapy, individual therapy. Just nothing worked. Just things got worse with everything that I was dealing with. And then my neurologist, once again, I said, okay, I was finding myself more in the emergency room in the hospital than I was at work. And I remember in 2016, everything just came to a head. I was advised to take this break. And that break was permanent. And I wasn't expecting that at all. That break happened in 2016 when the decision came back that we are so sorry. This is permanent and total for you. That threw me into a struggle. And it's the whole other part of now, where am I? I feel more lost than I've ever felt. I never thought that I worked so hard to be my age and said, well, there's nothing else that we can do for you. This is it. Due to sustained injuries, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. It's a lot to still accept. Sometimes I feel embarrassed. Embarrassed because I've done so much in my life to include the military, to include schooling, to include everything, and just to be on that path and then have it ripped from you. You have veterans that put in for claims. They say, oh, you get your percentage here, you get your percentage. And while I had my percentages, I never in a million years thought that it would come back static, permanent, and total. And you say, it's over for me. What am I going to do? I grew up in Baltimore City. You know, Baltimore City is like, it's a little jungle if you know anything about Baltimore City. And so to get out of there and to have goals and aspirations and dreams to do something with your life is what I did. So I didn't want it to end this way. I had lost my normal and had to find a new normal. And I didn't know what that looked like or what it entailed. It took me 2 years after, you know, returning home to trust the system. And again, like I said, you see the loopholes, you see where things fall apart, but I made it my business to educate myself on services, educate myself on benefits, and educate myself on, you know, how to navigate the system. And I've dedicated my time to teach others to do the same. The beginning of my career, after my military career, was working for an organization, a residential rehabilitation organization for homeless veterans, working very closely with the VA, the hospitals, the Veterans Benefit Administration, to make sure that as many veterans experience a smooth transition as possible. And that was in 2007. And I continued working with veterans until 2016. And that's how I'm living my life now, is giving back, you know, everything that I have, volunteering. In fact, that's how I met, you know, so many other veterans, is that I reached out to volunteer because my heart is still to help. My heart is still to help, you know, navigate and to create better experiences for veterans that needs assistance in navigating and being all that they could be, even as a veteran.
Alana Duffy, United States Army veteran.
I served in the U.S. Army as a counterintelligence investigator and interrogator from 2003 to 2012. I had wanted to be an astronaut. I'd wanted to be an astronaut since I was five. Then my second year into Cornell, found out that my eyesight was not only not good enough to be an astronaut, but they weren't even going to accept people with eye surgery at the time. So I stuck with engineering, got a job as essentially a civil engineer and project manager And I decided that sitting in a cubicle staring at blueprints was not the kind of existence that I wanted for the rest of my life. And, you know, I still wanted to be an astronaut. And so I said, you know what, that military thing that I've been kicking around since I was a kid, I'm going to do that now. And I quit my job and I enlisted so that I could do more hands-on operations, and went ahead from there. And I stayed in for about 10 years. So, you know, I guess I liked it well enough until they finally realized that they had injured me enough to boot me on out. When I was in Iraq, which was my second deployment, I went to Afghanistan in 2004 and Iraq in 2005. And I was an intelligence collector. So I was out with the infantry every day for, you know, 8 to 12 hours a day, and trying to find the bad guys with the bombs, in theory, before the bombs went off. I don't know if anyone who remembers the 1114 Humvees that had that stupid piece of metal where it was called a rifle mount, and you were supposed to, I never knew anyone who actually did it, but it was for the buttstock of the rifle, and then there was a little clip up by the top, and it was on the hinge side of the door in the rear passenger on both sides, and it was a rifle mount, and you would just, I guess, leave your rifle there. I don't know. We never used it, but the piece of metal was still there. And when we hit somebody, I mean, we hit very hard. It was a jingle truck, a worker truck in central Iraq. And I mean, three Iraqis were killed. It was a bad day for everyone. Demolished our vehicle, and I bounced forward, and my right ankle, the boot laces got like twisted on this piece of metal. And so when it slammed in, it chipped a piece of the bone, and then it twisted around and ended up tearing tendons inside the boot. So it was an amazing injury right there. And of course, the closest FOB, when we got there, the closest forward operating base, didn't have an x-ray. They didn't have anything else. It's probably sprained. Here's some Motrin. Take a knee, drink some water, do the military things. About 4 months later, we found out about the break and the tears and so forth. 2 weeks after that incident, I was on a mission to go and talk to someone who had just told us a couple weeks prior about a string of roadside bombs that was going to be put in place. We were on that particular road, and two bombs had been dug up, so they know the information was good. And then we found the third one the hard way by it hitting just outside of my vehicle. I was blown backwards. I was in an add-on armored truck. This was 05, so the MRAPs weren't a thing yet. Most of the heavy steel wasn't even in place yet. And I bounced back and whacked my head on, the concussive blast hit me from the front. So it's like getting hit by a freight train. And then I took a direct hit because there was a gap in the armor. And so I was hit by the concussive blast and then pivoted backwards and slammed my head on a metal plate. So even in a helmet, the sudden force and then the sudden stop rattled me a bit, and I ended up with having a brain hemorrhage and a severe traumatic brain injury. When I was younger, all the way up through high school, I was a gymnast, and my event was the balance beam. So 4 inches wide, 4 feet off the ground. Right after the blast hit, I couldn't walk in a straight line, and I have not been able to walk in a straight line ever since. Prior to the incident, I'd had a near photographic memory. I actually got my bachelor's and my master's of engineering in 4 years. I did a combined degree at an Ivy League school. I could hear something once and remember it perfectly. And now I couldn't remember the names of the guys that were in the truck with me. I had to read their names off of their nameplates. And I couldn't tell the vehicles. Like, I didn't know which vehicle to get back into. I didn't know, like, I didn't, when we finally, we had continued mission because as far as anybody knew, I'd just blown out my eardrums because my ears were bleeding. I was, in fact, wearing the defective earplugs. But we, so we continued mission. And as we did so, I went to my partner and I was like, are we at the next checkpoint? Like, what are we doing here? And he was like, no, this is the guy that you've been talking to for 3 months. And that's weird because you don't even normally take notes. So he had to run that meeting. And this was the same guy who had actually told us about the bombs that would have been put in place. And we had just hit one of them. And I had no idea. I had no idea what was going on. I actually don't remember any of this. All of this has been fed back to me over the years by the other people who were there, or and the sworn statements that were written, the incident reports and stuff like that, because I have no memory of any of it. But it took them about 2.5 years to do an MRI because they were in, they were on high alert for post-traumatic stress symptoms. And so they thought it was just post-traumatic stress or some sort of anxiety reaction. And so I got sent to mental health. I got sent to community mental health almost immediately, particularly because I snapped at my immediate supervisor who didn't take kindly to it and said, you're acting a little bit different. You should probably go to mental health. They were ignoring the headaches. They were ignoring the fact I thought, I described it as seeing shadows because I was losing my vision on the right-hand side, but I didn't know what was going on. If I was driving at night, it looked like something was coming up along the side of the car or coming out into the street because I was seeing shadows and the way the light was reflecting, I was seeing double and losing my vision. So it was crazy. And I would say like, oh, I don't know, I'm like seeing shadows on the side of the road. Okay, you're having PTSD symptoms, go to mental health. So, I mean, there were physical things that were wrong, but now I was just told that I was nuts for a while. You know, it was a very frustrating 2 years to about 2.5 years. I like to believe that in part, it was mostly because of the focus in the early to mid 2000s on post-traumatic stress as opposed to traumatic brain injuries. And I do have post-traumatic stress, which I finally admitted years later, but it makes you apprehensive to go to the doctor at all, which is what I stopped doing. I stopped going to any doctors because I was like, they're just going to tell me I'm going crazy. And I am definitely not just going crazy. I have, you know, all of these physical issues. And it wasn't until I told a physician's assistant during a post-deployment health reassessment, and he said, they just came out with a report on concussive blast injuries and you have every single symptom. I think you should see a neurologist. When I finally got an appointment with the neurologist, she was like, your eyes aren't syncing up. You're like, if your left eye doesn't have anything to do, it's just wandering off. Has that always been the case? And I was like, no, that is definitely new. But because there was pressure on my ocular nerve from the expanded mass inside my brain, like my eyes were all thrown off. She got me in for an MRI. She called me the same day as the MRI. The results came to her and she called me that night and said, okay, no, we see something. You had an apoplexy, which is basically a brain hemorrhage. And you need to get yourself to Walter Reed very soon. So I, about 2.5 years after the blast, I did have brain surgery. But by then, most of the nerve damage and everything else was permanent. But I bear no ill will towards any of the doctors. I mean, they just weren't studying it. They just weren't looking at it. They weren't looking for those symptoms. They weren't looking for those things. And then I stopped reporting them because, you know, I didn't want to go back to mental health because the stigma is real and especially in the intelligence field, where you might lose your clearance. Back then, especially, you could lose your clearance for a mental health diagnosis. And my job was like everything. So I was like, nope, not. I'm not going to report that. And then also just because I can't show any weakness. I guess part of it does have to deal with women being in the military and the pressures that you do feel of like, I can't show any weakness because if I do, like, they're going to tell me that I have to go sit behind a desk and move papers from one side to the other. Because that's all us ladies with our lady parts are good for. The need to constantly prove yourself is always there. Despite the fact that, like, their dehydrated radio guy nearly fell out on a dismounted convoy, and I ended up carrying the radio and all of that equipment plus my own equipment back for him. But, you know, women can't do nothing because we have those delicate lady bits, and that means that we can't do stuff. I was so adamant about staying on my job and being able to do my job that I was like, oh, you're telling me that like my ankle's just sprained? Okay, doesn't feel like a sprain, but that's cool. I'm good with that. I'll just wrap it up real tight, jam it in a boot, and keep on going. I looked for ways around my issues. I didn't want to tell anybody the severity of the headaches that they were like putting me in a fetal position sometimes just because the weather changed. I was in a specialty unit by then. Like I had assessed into a career unit, and I was one of seven enlisted people selected to do this particular intel job. And I can't get into this job and this really tough field and then be like, oh guys, but I have a headache, so can I just go home? So it was, oh well, if I'm hurt, whatever. If it's not affecting my job and it's not affecting me getting out there tomorrow, I'm going to get out there tomorrow because I know that the things that I'm doing have a direct impact on whether or not some of these guys come home. So I'm going. I wanted to stay in the military, so I was hiding a lot of symptoms. I was not talking about a lot of the things that was going on. And meanwhile, I fooled them enough times to promote my way to Sergeant First Class to an E7. And then they finally caught up to me and were like, yeah, but you can't actually deploy and you're never going to advance in your career again. So sorry about that. And they retired me. So I came back to New York because I'd grown up in the area. And said, yeah, I guess I'll do some stuff around here. Because I now also had nerve damage, that leg that I had injured was just getting worse. I was tingling on one side that was super sensitive, and then the other side was basically numb. So I would step off a curb and tear a tendon because I would roll my ankle like it was bananas. And then about a year and a half ago, I finally did it so badly that the MRI came back and my favorite line in any of my medical records said that my right ankle was internally deranged. So band name, called it, that is mine, internal derangement, my band name. But also I was like, all right, I've had enough, and started consulting. I got about three or four different opinions and ended up amputating my right leg below the knee in August of 2019. So fairly recent to at least taping this podcast. And it's so much less painful now. The VA has since picked up the physical therapy and all the rehab, and they got me a new rock climbing foot because I rock climb. And so now I'm starting to get back into that, and you know, six months later, getting back to rock climbing isn't a bad run. But yeah, so that's my world. Now I have a metal pole sticking out of my leg that I can change the feet on. So, you know, it's not that bad. Do I recommend it to people? Nah. Try to keep your legs if you can. But I'm glad that I did it because I have had my first pain-free days in 14 years since that surgery. And that's insane. So you want something that's insane. It's not post-traumatic stress. It's the fact that I was just like, forget it. I'll just deal with my leg as it is. It shouldn't take 14 years to be pain-free. But, you know, such is life. Moving on. Women don't even get recognized as veterans. Women, like, I haven't had it in a very long time where I walked into the VA and people are surprised that I'm not just there to see somebody, to visit somebody. You know, where does that leave me in terms of being acknowledged for what I've done? But quite frankly, I'd rather move forward anyway. So it's, okay, how do I fix it? It's a very engineer, I think, attitude of, I see a problem, I need to fix it. I mean, that's why I built the company that I built. I am now the CEO and founder of an online service connection platform for finding resources called Pathfinder.vet. It's an online platform that lets military veterans and family members share experiences anonymously with services, resources, benefits, and providers, and they share it with the rest of the military and veteran community. I wanted a place where veterans and families could go, and military members could go to look for a service and get the help that they need, regardless of who they are or where they are, and helping them find where they fit the first time. That is, I'd say, just as rewarding as being able to report on that bomb. So maybe somebody else gets to keep their life, or maybe even both legs. That's the rundown. Oh, run. That's a pun because I don't have a leg. I have a lot of foot puns, but that's okay. You know, best foot forward. They wouldn't give me the foot back, which was sad. Something about soft tissue not being authorized for release or something. I don't know. I was very disappointed because I wanted to get it stuffed and play pranks on people. But that's just me.
CivRep NYC is produced and edited by me, Gil Feliciano. Interviews are conducted by me and U.S. Navy veteran Monique Johnson. For the New York City Department of Veteran Services, stay safe.